Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm Patrick Castillo, and I have the great pleasure of introducing you to the 2014 season's Carte Blanche Concerts, Music at Menlo's signature series of artist-curated recital programs. Each year, Music at Menlo invites a cadre of chamber music's finest recitalists and chamber musicians to design a program highlighting their particular musical interests and indulging their most audacious creative impulses. In previous seasons, the Carte Blanche series has featured such memorable concerts as Colin Carr's performance of the complete Bach cello suites, Randall Scarlatta and Gilbert Kalisch's performance of Schubert's Winterreise, the Borromeo String Quartet's complete Bartok quartet cycle, as well as marathon recital programs by pianists Alessio Bax and Stephen Prutzman, violinist Suvin Kim, cellist Lawrence Lesser, and more. This season's Carte Blanche series promises to continue the festival's tradition of unforgettable musical experiences. We have four Carte Blanche concerts lined up, beginning with the Escher String Quartet's performance of the complete quartets of Alexander von Zemlinsky on Wednesday, July 23. On Sunday, July 27, pianist Arnaldo Cohen makes his Music at Menlo debut with a program of music by Bach, Brahms, and Chopin. Violinist Yura Lee and pianist Dina Weinstein follow on Wednesday, July 30, with a dazzling program of Czech and Hungarian virtuoso works. And pianist Gilles von Sattel, following his festival debut last season, returns with a powerful recital program based on themes of nationalism and revolution. For the summer's third Carte Blanche concert, violinist Yura Lee and pianist Dina Weinstein present a colorful program juxtaposing folk-inflected music by Czech and Hungarian composers. The recital will feature music by George Enescu, Antonin Dvorak, Jeno Hubai, Josef Suk, and Bela Bartok. Here's Yura to talk about the musical and personal resonance of their program.
The title of my program is Bohemian Rhapsody, and I wanted to title my program that from different angles. I wanted to focus on the word bohemian, not only from a geographical standpoint, but also from a musician standpoint. My life as a musician is oftentimes going from one place to another, just playing and traveling. And in a way, I feel like a bohemian, although I have a home. I live in Boston and Berlin, and already my homes are in two different places. So I constantly, ever since I started playing professionally, which was exactly 20 years ago, I've had this idea of a free spirit, bohemian spirit, that's always has like a tinge of nostalgia towards where you're from and who you are, which for us as a musician is not only where we're actually from, but we have to really live in the music that we're playing. So a home for us is perhaps a composer's home or the area of the music where you're from, and you read about it and you think about it and you try to feel the music from not just a, you know, from a book standpoint, but really visceral standpoint. So all the pieces in this program that I'm playing has sort of a rhapsodic feel in a way that it doesn't exactly adhere to the idea of a sonata form or a traditional composition form. It's more like a spoken word about the composer's heritage or culture or folk rhythms or dances. And even in a sonata, which the Bartok number one, it is a three-movement sonata. But when you hear the music, it is so free and it is so based on ethnomusicology and folk music and just a sense of freedom that is in every one of these pieces. The first piece I'll open the program with is The Impressions of Childhood by George Enescu. He was a violinist, a prolific player, and there's a very, very short recording of him playing. We don't have a lot of recordings existing of his playing. But this is like almost like a vignette of what he remembers from his childhood. He wrote this piece in 1940, so this is more of my guess, but he died in Paris. He didn't die in his homeland, which was Romania. And as a person, I'm living in a place where I wasn't born in. And even though I'm not a composer, I always have this tinge of nostalgia towards my homeland and towards my culture, because you cannot delete your blood. What you are is in your blood. And I feel like when I listen to this piece, the first piece that I'm playing, the Enescu Impressions of Childhood, I feel like he is almost like dreaming about his home and about his youth. And he's trying to grasp his dream images, which is sometimes not so clear, sometimes very foggy, dreamlike, faraway images. And he's trying to kind of musically take that out and give us vignettes of what he thinks of his childhood and how, you know, we get to experience that through his music. The second piece I'm playing, Dvorak 4 Romantic Pieces, I wanted to put that in the same program as the Suk 4 pieces, which I'll be playing after the intermission, because Suk was married to Dvorak's eldest daughter. Yes, they're both 4 pieces, but they're very different in a way. Dvorak is very much, hence the title, Romantic Pieces. They're very lush and very romantic, and it's the only piece in this program of 5 pieces that starts in the key that it was written for. It doesn't start in another harmony, so it feels very grounded, feels very romantic, very happy in a way. Of course, there's always a sense of nostalgia. There are 4 movements. The last movement is very slow. And apparently there was a sketch for a 5th movement. So I can imagine this piece being 5 romantic pieces with a happy ending. But it has a very, very sad, nostalgic, like a grandmother remembering her past kind of feeling to it. The only composer in my program who didn't play violin, at least on record, is Bartok. The other 4 composers, Enescu, Dvorak, Hubai, and Joseph Suk, all played violin. So all the pieces have a very virtuosic flair, and especially the Hubai Charda.
The first half of the program ends with the 3rd of the gypsy-inflected and highly virtuosic Sen de la Charda by the Hungarian violinist and composer Jenő Hubai.
I actually have never heard it being played, in my lifetime at least. I know that Joseph Szigeti used to play it, but the essence or the feel of showpiece has changed over the years. These days, people don't play it as much anymore. But I wanted to, in this program, explore both known and unknown pieces and both sides of violin playing, which is sometimes very methodical, structured, but also sometimes very rhapsodic, showy. And there's a reason why we have these high strings and the ability to be very virtuosic on the strings. Like, there's almost no vertical limits. It's all horizontal linearity and the virtuosity that you can get from that. Some pieces present that very, very to the forefront. After the intermission, I will play the Suk 4 pieces. And I also don't know why these are not played very much, because one of my favorite melodies is in the 2nd movement. There's a sense of, I can just imagine being on the train and just glancing out the window and thinking of a memory, but the train is still moving. So there's that sort of locomotiveness and a timelessness that he just portrays so beautifully in the music. Thank you. As a player, I tend to not listen to too much of the music that I'm playing at the moment because I want to be lost in my own musical thoughts, but I just can't stop listening to this movement and just reveling in the beauty, the simple beauties. It's just the piano is playing almost like a perpetual melody. It has a little bit tinge of nostalgia, and also it's like an undercurrent of water, and the violin is playing this beautiful melody on top, and it's, as of now, one of my favorite moments in music that I've known.
The program concludes with one of the most imposing masterpieces of the modern violin repertoire, Béla Bartók's Violin Sonata No. 1.
Bartók goes through a couple of very clear musical languages, and some are more simple than others. And in this sonata, he was able to combine very basic folk rhythms through very, very, very intricate harmonies. It starts in a very, very complex harmony that the piano is playing an arpeggiated chord. Immediately from the start, it gives us a feeling of pain because the first note on the piano is a C sharp. The first note on the violin, just a short while later, is a C natural. So there's that clash. You just listen and then you feel it right away in your heart. And some music, you have to think about it more and learn about it more, and it takes some time to understand the inner workings of music. This piece, I find, as a player and as a listener, you can trust your gut to understand it, but at the same time, there's like a higher dimension of intellectual qualities, and I find new things about this piece every time I study it again. It's something that needs imagination to listen to, not only because the harmonies are so complex, but I would say it's like almost like a fourth dimension that you have to rely on to listen to this, because you can't just rely on the notes or the rhythm or the dynamic. It's something that you just need to feel and imagine what he was thinking when he was writing this piece. Bartók uses a lot of different techniques, such as harmonics, pizzicatos, and a lot of grace notes and trills. All those things, I find it's almost like emulating a folk singer. And also, sometimes I hear bird sounds. Sometimes I hear even like a river current, a very, very heavy current of water. All the sounds that I'm trying to emulate or that I hear from the notes that he wrote is something that is more than just paper. I hear a lot of nature sounds, and I include the singers in that, like a human voice that comes from generations of tradition. The sounds that you don't often traditionally make on the violin per se, it's almost like pushing a limit, so to say. You know, modern music wants to push limits all the time, but when I look at composers like Bartók, he's been pushing limits long before we thought we were, we as in my generation, thought we were breaking boundaries. There are some sounds that in Enescu and in Bartók that I have never tried to make on another piece. Thank you. I recently went to an exhibition of Bartok's photos and manuscripts and artists around this time in Paris. And when I was looking at the photos of him, of Bartok, when you look at somebody at their face, how they portray their own emotions, there were countless photos, but I've never seen one that he was openly, I wouldn't say smiling, but openly content. There was always very, very deep thoughtfulness about him. And in a way, I could imagine him being a man with a lot of friction in his mind, always maybe wanting something that he couldn't have or wanting to express something that was just more than what we knew. And it's just like striving for something more, but there's always that sense of, let's say, a balance of melancholia and nostalgia and striving for happiness, but not reveling in it, not living in it. And I was very moved by seeing him play and looking at all his photos, and all those things helped me understand his music better. Pieces. I'm really, the theme of this year's Menlo Festival has allowed me to create something that I've always wanted to create, but is not, I never thought I could program these 5 pieces together in a concert setting and make it work. And I was able to do that this year. So I'm very excited about this program. Yeah.